This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
According to a report by the international organization Human Rights Watch, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police in northern British Columbia have failed to protect Indigenous women and girls from violence, adding to long-standing tensions between the RCMP and Indigenous communities in the region. Women and girls interviewed by Human Rights Watch also described abusive treatment by police officers, including use of force against girls, strip searches of women by male officers, and physical and sexual abuse. Women who call the police for help have reported being blamed for domestic abuse, shamed over alcohol or substance use, and have found themselves at risk of arrest for actions taken in self-defense. We're joined on the phone by Samer Muscati, one of the two Human Rights Watch researchers who prepared the report.
Welcome to People First Radio, Samer.
Thank you very much for having me.
Your report states that the failure of law enforcement authorities to deal effectively with the problem of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls in Canada is just one element of the dysfunctional relationship between the Canadian police and Indigenous communities. Tell us about that dysfunctional relationship and what you learned in doing this research.
Yes, well, it's a dysfunctional relationship. It's a deeply fractured relationship that has gone back generations. You know, even in the 1920s, when residential school attendance was compulsory, the RCMP was playing a role to ensure that Aboriginal children had to attend. And as a consequence, even a report that was commissioned by the RCMP found that the police were perceived as, you know, an authority figure who takes members of the community away or arrests them for wrongdoing. And that's part of the reason why we called our report "Those Who Take Us Away." It's unfortunately, you know, an issue that has been going on for a long time. Our report does draw some light to the issues, but we're by no means the first to report on these issues.
For many Indigenous women and girls that you interviewed for this report, abuses and other indignities, and I'm taking the language from the report, visited on them by the police have come to define their relationship with law enforcement. So what are the larger implications of that for the women, their families, and the communities in which they live?
It's a difficult situation. I mean, one of the things we found was such insecurity for women and girls and others in the community and few options for them to turn for help in these situations. On one hand, there's a threat of domestic and random violence, and on the other hand now, there's this mistreatment of RCMP officers. It really leaves Aboriginal women in a constant state of that insecurity and really no mechanisms to reach out to when they're in need of help.
In total, and I'm reading from the methodology that you used to do this research, Human Rights Watch conducted 87 interviews for this report, which is a large number of interviews. Quote, "We spoke with 42 Indigenous women and 8 Indigenous girls ranging in age from 15 to their late 60s in the communities we visited. You also spoke with a number of people who were linked with organizations, community members, and you spoke with 7 current and former officers of the E Division of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police in 3 interviews arranged through unofficial channels." Give us a sense of what the data collection experience was like for you personally and also how it unfolded.
You know, normally we wouldn't spend as much time as we did in northern British Columbia. It took us about 5 weeks. The lead researcher, Megan, really traveled to more than 10 communities. I was there for part of it. But given how many places we had to visit and also the level of fear that women and girls had, we did have to spend, that amount of time on the ground in order to put people at ease. But it was very difficult because, you know, given the insecurity that women and girls had, they were reluctant to come forward, even though we promised them anonymity. And sometimes we would have interviews set up and people wouldn't show up, or they just would stop during the interview because of a fear of a backlash if it became known that they were speaking to us. So that was quite a challenging experience, but at the same time, you know, spending as much time as we did on the ground, allowed us to get the testimonials that are in the report.
You acknowledge that, of course, in your comments on the methodology, and you note that community service providers talked about the fear of exposure that's particularly acute in small towns of the north, where police and community members would likely be able to identify a person from just a few details of their stories. I want to also comment or ask for your comments on the RCMP members themselves. Now, you did not inform the RCMP of your intention to conduct the research in advance or approach any of the detachments for interviews during the field research. What was your relationship like with the RCMP as you conducted your interviews out in the field?
Well, I mean, it was intentional that we didn't let anyone know that we're coming because, of course, these are very small communities and we didn't want to put anyone on notice that we were arriving there. So, afterwards, of course, we did send a letter with our general findings to the RCMP, and we have had meetings with them since then. But at the time, we wanted women and girls to feel as comfortable as possible in speaking to us. So it was a conscious decision not to let many people know what we were doing and where we were going and who we were meeting with. But going forward, of course, we have a series of recommendations to the RCMP that we hope that they'll implement. And when we were in the field, we did have discussions with some RCMP members unofficially and who did tell us, some details about some of the cases as well as their own experiences on the force in the north. And unfortunately, their narratives were just as troubling as everyone else that we spoke with.
The report states Canada has strong legal protections around violence against women, and the federal and provincial governments have made some attempts to address murders and disappearances of Indigenous women through studies, task forces, and limited funding initiatives. However, the persistence of the violence indicates a need for a deeper coordinated intervention or interventions to address the systemic nature of the problem. Tell us more about the recommendations. You've got several to the Government of Canada, to the provincial government, and others.
We do, and I just want to make a point on this as well. Since we've released our report, some of the pushback we've received, including from Prime Minister Harper, is for us to, reveal this information to the authorities in terms of the specific cases. And we feel that misses the point of the report because there's a lot of recommendations that address more of the systemic and abuses that are happening. And although these cases perhaps are new, individual cases have gone back decades that they can draw on in terms of trying to change the policies toward Aboriginal women and girls. I mean, first and foremost, we're recommending, and this is not our recommendation, this has come from, the Native Women's Association of Canada and more recently the Assembly of First Nations as well as other groups, to establish a national commission of inquiry into the murders and disappearances of Indigenous women and girls, and to make sure that the terms of reference for this inquiry is developed with the leadership from the affected communities, and that they also include an examination of not only current but also historical relationship between the police and the Indigenous communities. And this would include looking at systemic socioeconomic marginalization as well as discrimination. There's other recommendations that we have specifically to the RCMP, including expanding training for police officers to counter racism and sexism. We're also asking the RCMP to examine their policies on searches of women and girls by male officers, and also prohibiting the use of tasers and police dogs and pepper spray when dealing with girls and youth. And also, making sure that some of these officers are stationed at the detachments in the north for more than a year for a sufficient amount of time so that they develop those strong relationships with the local community. So we have a series of recommendations, and we really hope that they'll be looked at seriously.
Tell us more about what is happening right now in terms of reactions to this report. You mentioned the Prime Minister's response, and what are the next steps in all of this?
Yeah, it was very reassuring. We were just 2 days ago, we were out in Prince George and we had a meeting with the chiefs of the Karis-Sakani Tribal Council. And, not just them, but everyone we've spoken to up north and in other places, it's really resonated some of the stories in our report. Unfortunately, none of this is new to the communities who are living there. This is a practice that is well known to them. And the level of support that we've gotten has been incredible. And we were there to reassure them that we won't be revealing specific information that we have, because obviously, you know, our first and foremost concern is that of the victims who have already been through so much. And really, we would need their consent to reveal any specific information. And the onus shouldn't be on us and on others to provide information. It should be on the RCMP and the government to create a process whereby people feel comfortable coming forward and don't feel that they might actually be abused further. So we're continuing with our advocacy efforts, primarily with the RCMP, to try to push them to take, you know, note of our recommendations. And also, I think they understand that we're not attacking the entire police force. We're saying that there are some serious incidents and the RCMP has to address them. But also, they need to do this for themselves, for the good officers who are actually, you know, doing good and protecting the community. It's unfair to them when you have these other officers who are tarnishing the reputation of the entire force.
What has your research revealed about racism in Canada? Are there learnings there and things that we need to be aware of right now?
Yes, I mean, it's, you know, one of the issues that kept coming up in the different communities that we visited was that the RCMP officers, some of them had a general presumption of criminality in their interactions with Indigenous women and girls in the north. And that also police appear to target Indigenous girls and women for the most trivial of reasons. So we have a sense that even though there was an over-policing of these communities, there still wasn't, a protection, unfortunately. And there are many examples pointed to us, including service providers who told us that some officers routinely incarcerated Indigenous girls for intoxication if they were found to have consumed alcohol and were in need of transportation home, whereas white girls, for instance, in the same situation would be driven home. And that's just one example of some of the discriminatory practices that service providers told us. But there was definitely a sense that, you know, that unfortunately when women and girls needed help, sometimes they'd be blamed for what had happened to them. They would be shamed and some inappropriate comments would be made, which led us to believe that in these situations there was, an abusive practice in play.
Samer Muscati, we have to leave it at that. Thank you very much for taking the time to join us. It was much appreciated.
Thank you so much for having me.
Samer Muscati is the emergencies researcher in the Women's Rights Division at Human Rights Watch.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Center Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.